KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Downtown.
Fruitvale. Out in East Oakland.
I live in Lake Merritt neighborhood.
Coming up, the race to be Alameda County District Attorney. Since 2009, it's been Nancy O'Malley.
If people know what we do, I think people would be very proud of this DA's office.
This election, O'Malley's being challenged for the first time by civil rights lawyer Pamela Price.
There are alternatives to incarceration, and it's going to happen in Alameda County.
We'll hear from both. And we continue our series of interviews with San Francisco's mayoral candidates. Today, London Breed.
We can't continue to let bureaucracy run its course and be reactionary to these problems. We have got to be proactive in dealing with those.
Election day is tomorrow. Get ready. Today on Cross Currents. For the first time in nearly a decade, Alameda County District Attorney Nancy O'Malley is running against an opponent. She was appointed in 2009 and ran unopposed in 2010 and 2014. The person running against her this year is Pamela Price, an African-American civil rights attorney who says she wants to create change in the county's criminal justice system. The incumbent, O'Malley, is endorsed by Governor Jerry Brown, Senator Kamala Harris, the mayors of Oakland and Berkeley, and many others. Price's endorsement list includes Alicia Garza of Black Lives Matter, former Oakland Mayor Ron Dellums, and civil rights icon Angela Davis, to name a few. Today, we'll hear from both candidates. First, Pamela Price. She has been criticized for having no experience as a prosecutor and for saying she would not prosecute misdemeanors, which prompted a protest rally by victims of domestic violence. First, I asked Price about running for DA when she's never worked as a prosecutor.
I have a degree from Yale and 2 degrees from UC Berkeley. I've practiced law for almost 40 years. I've been a Northern California super lawyer every year since 2003. I know how to practice law. I'm actually a little smarter than the average bear. I'm a quick study. And I get along well with people. I've had a wonderful career as a civil rights lawyer. And I've been serving this community and representing all kinds of people. So I have had the privilege and the honor of standing in the gap for people in their worst moment. I can't think of a better person to be a prosecutor.
What does policing reform look like to you if you are elected after this district attorney?
Well, first and foremost, it looks like it requires police accountability. Under my administration, we will establish a police accountability unit that will function similar to the way an Office of Inspector General functions in federal agencies or even in state agencies, where we have independent prosecutors, investigators who are not tied to the law enforcement agencies that I'm asking them to oversee or to investigate, who will help us to bring about and ensure that we have accountability for a way to hold bad cops accountable for bad acts.
And then what about the people who are saying that your rhetoric and a lot of your points are anti-police? What would you say to them?
I would say that I have had the honor and the privilege of representing some of the finest police officers in this state, particularly the women who work at the California Department of Corrections. But I've also represented members of Oakland Police Department. I've represented the first female deputy sheriff of Sacramento County. So I understand what a brave officer looks like. I know one when I see one, and I've been around them and appreciated the service that they provided, but they stood for what was right. They made decisions based on what they knew what was right, and they didn't participate in the code of silence or the blue wall. That has to stop. One of the most pernicious things that undermines our democracy right now is the code of silence, whether it's in the federal government or in law enforcement. And we have to stop that. I will support officers who want to protect, really want to protect and serve the community. That's what I need. Oakland has a 30% homicide solve rate. That is unacceptable. We need to be in partnership with police officers. They need to be in partnership with this community.
So the Chronicle and the East Bay Express reported that you said you would not prosecute misdemeanors. Did you ever actually say that?
I said it to a group of district attorneys who work in the district attorney's office. And what I said to them was, we have to stop prosecuting misdemeanors, because 71% of the cases that they prosecute are misdemeanors. The number of cases that actually go through diversion programs is like a drop in the bucket. And so what I was really trying to get them to understand is that there are alternatives to incarceration, that it's happening across the country, and it's going to happen in Alameda County.
A number of people came forward and were talking about, well, Pamela Price is not going to prosecute misdemeanors, and that will affect us as a community affected by domestic violence, because some of the only reasons why their perpetrators and attackers are not doing it again is because they caught a misdemeanor.
So what was said was that I said I would not prosecute domestic violence cases. And that was an absolute lie. Mm-hmm. It was a complete fabrication. And it was used to try to incite fear in this community. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. That's why I went down to try to meet with the women who were organized to come out against me, because I wanted them to know, you have been misled. Not only am I a survivor of domestic violence, I've co-founded the Bay Area Defense Committee for Battered Women. For me, prosecuting domestic violence most often should be looked at in the context of a felony. So my comments were taken out of context and used by people who wanted to try to create a side issue in this race.
So just for the record and to be clear, you will prosecute misdemeanors. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying I will prosecute domestic violence cases as appropriate. I will prosecute DUIs as appropriate. I will prosecute misdemeanors as appropriate, with the caveat that we have to look at how we reform our criminal justice system. And part of that reform is looking for alternatives to incarceration. So to the extent that there are misdemeanor crimes that can go through a neighborhood courts program, or that can go to a homeless court, or that can go to a veterans court, or that can go to I'd like to establish a specialty court, one for domestic violence, but also for people who are arrested or taken into custody and charged with misdemeanor being involved in the sex trade.
People are going to the polls tomorrow. What is the one thing, if there was one thing that you want people to understand about you, what would that be?
That I love this community, that I will be accountable to this community, and I want you to hold me accountable, that a safe community is a strong community, and that we have to all step out and do some things that we weren't planning on doing to protect ourselves and protect our democracy.
That was Pamela Price, candidate for district attorney in Alameda County. Next, we'll hear from the incumbent, Nancy O'Malley. Recently, she's been criticized for accepting a $10,000 campaign donation from the Fremont Police Union while her department was investigating officers in that department for the 2017 killing of 16-year-old Elena Mondragon. But first, I asked her about alternatives to incarceration for young people and the rehabilitative program called Restorative Justice, in which victims and offenders meet and talk about how to repair the harm done. This is from your platform that your priority for youth engaged in criminal activity is always rehabilitation and providing restorative justice to youth.
Right.
And then at the same time, I see a leading restorative justice figure like Fania Davis not supporting you. And it's just, I'm wondering, like, what have you done, what has your department done to minimize levels of incarceration for youth and encourage these alternatives to incarceration?
So part of what we've been doing with juvenile is we have youth court. We do have restorative justice through Community Works. We've gotten a wonderful award from them. We have diversion. We have reduced the number of filings against juvenile by 2/3 in the last 5 years. We're in the schools. We have a lot of programs that are helping youth to find their path.
When a leader in a program like restorative justice supports your opponent and not yourself, does that tell you anything? Does that make you think about anything? Or
no, I mean, I respect Fania Davis. I you know, think RJOY is an excellent program. I wish it had more funding to get more broadly implemented. But, you know, I have a lot of support myself.
Let's talk about your support. Long list, including the governor, government agencies, mayors from all around the county, including where I'm from, Union City, police officers association all over the county. Your opponent is endorsed by a number of progressive groups, number of elected officials, but also by community groups that, that represent some black and brown communities, Black Lives Matter, youth groups, Angela Davis, Ron Dellums, social justice and civil rights icons. It's just looking at these lists, it feels like there's a divide or a disconnect. Can you comment on that?
Well, I don't think there are. I mean, I think that we both have support from diverse communities, but it doesn't come down for me. It doesn't really come down to race. It might come down to philosophy, but not race.
Where do you think we are in terms of community trusting police in Alameda County and maybe in Oakland in particular? Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we have work to, we still have work to do. I think one of the things that's helping to change the dynamic, not from the relationship standpoint as much as from police awareness, is that the law now requires them to log and document contacts with the community, including identifying the ethnicity of the person that they're engaging with. And when we have data, it allows us to tell the truth about what's really happening. So people can say, no, we don't have racial profiling, or we're not stopping someone based on race. But then when you start looking at data, you might see a very different picture. And I think that that helps to have honest internal conversation.
One of the main arguments against your campaign has to do with your accepting of $10,000 from the Fremont Police Union while your office was investigating members of that police force for the 2017 death of 16-year-old Elena Mondragon. Your office investigated and eventually cleared the officers. Mm-hmm. So first of all, is it accurate that you accepted money from the union months before your department cleared the Fremont policemen from wrongdoing?
I did get a campaign contribution from the Fremont Police Officers Association in the amount of $10,000. And so I had a team that was investigating the Fremont situation. They're not involved in politics at all, nor should they be, because in the DA's office, this is why it's a nonpartisan race, in the DA's office, it really has to be free of bias and or prejudice or favoritism. So those members that investigated the case had nothing to do with the campaign. I was in the campaign mode. So I got the campaign donation. They did the investigation. When it came to, I agree with the decision they made, but when it came to light that there's the work that now has an appearance of impropriety because of the campaign, that I immediately reached out to the Attorney General's office and then beyond. So that case has been turned over to a different agency, and they are doing the investigation from start to finish. The money that rather than just give it back to the Fremont Police, I gave it to a women's shelter because those are things that I've fought for my career. And so that money went to a women's shelter, and that's where we are. We're waiting for some decision from the other agency. And I think that the women's shelter was very grateful that they received $10,000.
But you get how people may have started thinking like, it might be problematic or it's concerning to people.
Of course. Of course. That's why I did what I did.
What's the one thing you want people to understand before this election, before they go to the polls?
I think that if people know what we do, if they went to the website and learned about what we're doing, or they themselves had an experience that helped them get beyond the negative part of their interaction with us, meaning being a victim of crime or being involved in crime, that I think people have been, I think people would be very, very proud of this DA's office and me.
That was Alameda County District Attorney Nancy O'Malley. You can listen to my conversations with her and fellow candidate Pamela Price at KELW.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We'll turn our attention now to San Francisco's mayor's race. When Mayor Ed Lee unexpectedly passed away last December, London Breed became acting mayor, the first African-American woman in that position. But her fellow supervisors voted to remove her from that role after she decided to run for the office. London Breed grew up in San Francisco's Western Addition. She went to high school and grad school in the city. She's been a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors since 2012 and the board's president since 2015. Of the eight candidates for mayor, she's the only one who did not agree to an interview with KELW's news director, Ben Trefney. But she did come in to talk with Your Call's Rose Aguilar. Here's an excerpt of that conversation.
You were born and raised here. I've lived here since 95. I'm a California native. And it's amazing to see the changes in this city, as you know. We've got massive inequality. I just read that San Francisco now has the third most billionaires of any city in the world. The average home is about $1 million. A one bedroom in my neighborhood is renting for $4,000. Major homeless encampments. When you look at all these changes, how do you explain how we got to this point?
It's really difficult to explain. I think part of the challenge is someone who grew up here. I grew up actually in public housing. I lived there over 20 years of my life. I spent a lot of my time working in the community trying to address issues around violence because we were not only losing my friends to gun violence, but we were losing their kids when I started working in the community after college. And so a lot of my focus has been on working directly in the community and also trying to push as a redevelopment agency commissioner to build more housing and to make sure that there's a real connection between people who are a part of San Francisco and their opportunity to actually access the housing in our city. It's why I fought so hard for neighborhood preference legislation that we passed on the Board of Supervisors, giving 40% preference for people who live in that particular neighborhood. So most of my career has been trying to fight to connect the dots. And how we got here, you know, it's a sad state of affairs. I mean, but I do know that between 2010 and 2015, for every eight jobs we created, when we focused on jobs, 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 we only created one unit of housing. We started to build. We have all these different new developments happening all over our city. But a lot of the folks, I think, who are homeless in many ways here in our streets probably were it was easier to hide. And now everyone's kind of being pushed from one place to the next place to the next place. And now you're starting to see it more. Mm-hmm. And what we have to do as a city is propose new, bold ideas to address some of these challenges.
Well, and a lot of people say that some of the reason why we got here is because of some of the policies that have been implemented, for example, under the Lee administration. So to see such massive inequality and people suffering in a city with so much wealth, I mean, you know, Angela Alioto, when we had her on, she said it was tech. Jane Kim said it's because HUD has been totally gutted. I mean, what are your thoughts about just how we got to this place?
And I will just say that I don't think it's fair to point the finger at one particular individual. I mean, all of the candidates who are running pretty much served in some capacity a lot longer than I have.
Right.
We all have to take responsibility for the role that we might have played in the challenges that exist. I mean, yes, of course, for the great things we stand up and we try and talk about great things that we've been able to do. Like, for example, I'm really proud that I got Mayor Lee to give the San Francisco Housing Authority $2 million, and we placed 179 formerly homeless families into permanent affordable housing. So I'm proud of those things, but I do think that we have to make better decisions. We can't continue to let bureaucracy run its course and be reactionary to these problems. We have got to be proactive in dealing with those. For example, building more housing, making sure that we cut the time to build housing in San Francisco in half. We passed inclusionary housing laws so that middle-income residents can finally qualify for affordable housing. You know how it is, especially with teachers and other folks who we talk about building affordable housing for. They make a little bit too much to qualify for affordable housing, but not enough to afford market rate in San Francisco. I pushed to change those inclusionary housing laws, and they passed at the board unanimously. So a family of four, say, for example, making $130,000 a year, that's two teachers potentially, they could actually qualify. But we got to build it. We got to build more, and we got to connect those people that we know need housing to those opportunities. And my neighborhood preference legislation is also a tool for that purpose.
So you brought up a lot of points there, and not to point fingers, but I did ask Supervisor Kim, because she did vote for the Twitter tax cut, which always gets a lot of attention, right? I mean, talk a little bit about what you will do. What is your relationship going to be like with some of these big businesses? Because here's what happens. These companies go public, and they create millionaires overnight. People making $200,000-$300,000 cannot compete with that. This is just the reality
yes.
that we have here in San Francisco. And the big criticism over that is that there is no quid pro quo, right? The city gave these companies tax cuts. We didn't really get much in return. So what is your relationship going to be like? There's a lot of new employees coming, a lot of money coming. So what's your relationship
going
to be like?
My relationship is going to be such, of course, I want to make sure that I hold all companies accountable to pay their fair share. It's why I put Proposition D on the ballot. It's an increase in commercial real estate tax, not retail, commercial real estate, for the purposes of, you know, generating $1 billion that could help pay for housing in San Francisco for formerly homeless, for low, for moderate income residents. I also want to make sure that we are basically tapping into that and developing partnerships and getting those companies to do a couple of things. Help pay for housing. The job growth that they are producing is amazing, but it needs to be, number one, tied to helping us build more housing. And number two, making sure the people who live in San Francisco are tapped into, that there's a connection between those jobs and people who are already residents of San Francisco. I want to make sure these companies have paid internships for our high school students. If it weren't for the mayor's youth employment and training program, I don't know where I'd be. I have a brother, sadly, who is incarcerated. Think about the difference in opportunity, a door that's open to something that's right in the backyard of most of these kids who are left out or forgotten.
Yeah.
Making sure these companies are not just pouring money into the schools, which is also important, but they're bringing these kids into this field and preparing the next generation of young people in this city for those exact opportunities so that they're not seeking talent outside of our city when we have talent right here.
That's San Francisco mayoral candidate London Breed speaking with Your Call host Rose Aguilar. You can hear an extended version of that conversation and interviews with the other seven candidates at kalw.org. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Amber Miles, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Josh Wilson. And a big welcome to our new summer volunteers starting today, Naria Marquez-Martinez, Mira Nabulsi, and Marco Seiler-Gonzalez. This music is Maria Jose Montijo from Berkeley. She plays Wednesday night at Savvy Rest Natural Bedroom. Show starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Una razón heroica para estar así, como un animal sin piel, un eclipse.